to the Burrows of Berea. I am Rick Welch. And guys, it's Christmas time. And if you remember last year, and I think every year, this gentleman always does something around this time of year that is very meaningful. I love to listen to his podcast, and you know him very well here, Mr. Gary DeMar. Last year, we talked about Christmas movies, and I asked him, would you come back and let's talk about it some more? So hello, Mr. Gary DeMar.
Well, it's always good to talk to you, Rick.
Yeah, let's take a break from all of the stuff going on. You know, got Kirk Cameron upsetting all of Christendom. He is our friend.
Hey, I told Kirk, I said, I'm glad it's him now, not me for a while. So
yeah. You take some heat. You take some heat for a while. Also, I just listened this morning on my morning walk to the 1 Corinthians 15 with you and Kim Burgess that you released yesterday. And I enjoyed it because that was definitely a question, the use of the word until, whenever Christ hands the kingdom back to the Father. You guys handled that very well. And I'm looking forward to 2 Corinthians 4 and 5. You guys are going to get into that soon, right?
Yeah. And we've already done 1 Corinthians 15 in previous podcasts. Mm-hmm. And the question that Kim answered the other day was part of all that. So we are now going to turn all that into a book like we did with the Hope of Israel and the Nations book. So I've got, hopefully Kim will get on that. They've all been transcribed and now the kind of the editing process, because what you do orally is different from the way you write. And there are things that when you actually go through it and go through the editing process, you can add some things, clarifications and footnotes and things of that sort. So that's something that'll come out early next year as well.
Very good. Yeah, I like how you're building this. And as you continue, you can just keep adding and building, you know, because obviously it stems from the Hope of Israel and the Nations, and then the Covenant Hermeneutics and Biblical Eschatology, and, you know, that podcast, then what you're doing on the Gary DeMar podcast. So there's a lot of information out there for people if they really want to, you know, understand what you guys have been doing. So I think it's great. I love it. It's great for a walking workout, guys. It's a good 30 minutes, sometimes 40 minutes, that you can get into some deep theological study. So that's great. Before we get started, do you have anything new coming on the horizon?
Well, I have a book called Israel and Bible Prophecy that I just finished my part of it. It's 10 chapters. And I just got it back from the typesetter. So I got the first draft from the typesetting. And then Brian Gadawa is going to supply some chapters as well. Hmm. It still needs an introduction and probably there'll be an appendix to it. I'm guessing it'll be about a 225 page book. I think it'll be very helpful. This is something that people have lots of questions about, and I cover most of the big questions related to what does all Israel mean in Romans 11:26. What does the Israel of God mean? What about the fulfillment of the Abrahamic and Davidic promises? There are other things involved. The big one is that dispensationalists always claim that they have a role for Israel in Bible prophecy and other prophetic systems do not. But what they generally don't tell you is that their system requires another Jewish Holocaust during the Great Tribulation period. And if you're a pre-tribber, you believe the rapture is going to take place before the 7-year tribulation period. During that 7 years, 2/3 of the Jews living in Israel are going to be slaughtered. Mm-hmm. There'll be another Holocaust. And so I deal with that because a lot of Christians out there, when they talk about only dispensationalists have a role for Israel in Bible prophecy, in one sense, that's true. But the question you have to ask is, what is that role? What is going to happen to Israel during their system?
Correct.
And
yes.
So I spent a lot of time on this because this was an issue. Dwight Wilson had written a book called Armageddon Now, and Wilson was a premillennialist, and he talked about some of the rhetoric that took place during World War II regarding what was happening to the Jews, and many saw that as a fulfillment of Bible prophecy, and so those were taking, the phrase he used was a hands-off approach to it, because hey, this is a prophetic inevitability. So this should be a very helpful book.
Good. And you said that comes out at the first of the year?
Yeah, it's I'm kind of a one-man show. One-man
Yeah,
show.
right.
I'm dependent on the typesetter, cover design, proofreading, and so forth. When I send it off to the typesetter, I get it back, then I go through it again, and trying to find things, fix things. And if anybody out there is interested in proofreading, let me know at GaryDemard, AmericanVision.org, and I'll send you the chapters, and you can help me with proofreading for it.
Yeah, that's a lot to do for a one man show, running that and doing all this. We also it's already been announced, but Eric Rauch and Zach Davis have a book about John the Baptist that is out, and you can get it right now in an e-published version. I don't know, is it going to be a paperback eventually? I'm
It
not
already
sure.
is. It
Oh, it already is.
fact, I think, do I have a copy of it here? I know I brought it home. So it's already out in paperback.
All right, great. I've got the Kindle edition. I'm going to go ahead and get that paperback
You can go to
edition.
AmericanVision.org for that. And then we are coming out with a book that was published in 1993 by Canon Press. It's called And It Came to Pass. And it's a straight reprint. We haven't added anything to it. And there are a lot of interesting articles in there dealing with preceding the big debate that's taken place with me and the three questions letter and so forth. And there's some articles in that book that are helpful, and we are reprinting it. We didn't have to typeset it. We're just printing it. It's going to be a facsimile of the original book. And I think we got the cover on it, so it should come out early in should be out in January of this year.
Okay, great. Well, guys, go over to AmericanVision.org. And take a look. They've got a lot of other books too, that's available in articles, and you can watch videos. There's all kinds of stuff over there at American Vision. So go check it out and support Gary DeMar in his American Vision. I think it's a worthwhile cause. And you are to be such a busy man. I appreciate you taking time out. So let's take a break from the discussions of hell and eschatology, and let's talk about some fun things if we can.
Okay.
So I had sent you, obviously we covered last year, and I'd sent you a new list of some movies. And this year I did a little bit different. There's a couple of the films in that list that I actually haven't seen. So I'm going to be hearing what you have to say about them and then go watch them myself after we're done with doing this. So I'm looking forward to doing that. So is there a movie from that list that you want to go right after? You want to get after?
Well, the first thing a lot of people have may not have seen the one we did already, and just a couple of things. Something I saw on It's a Wonderful Life, which came out in 1946 and starred Jimmy Stewart and Donna Reed and a lot of fine character actors. It's a terrific book, and many people don't realize that it was not a success. And when it first came out, Frank Capra came out with it. It was one of his favorite films, and of course Jimmy Stewart. And it was kind of a against character in terms of what Jimmy Stewart had done before, because he did a lot of comedies before, and then he went on to do some westerns, and this was a little different. But there's a scene in the film where Jimmy Stewart is on the bridge, and he starts to pray. And I listened to an interview he did about that, and he was doing that prayer. He was genuinely moved by it. The tears that we saw in the film, those were real tears. I mean, this prayer that he gave was very, very impactful. And even when he was describing this in this interview many years later, he's I'm tearing up again over it. You don't, A lot of these Christmas films, I would call borrowed capital films. They don't really tell what you and I would say is the Christmas story. And when we did the first list, I mentioned Ben-Hur. And a lot of people said, like, Ben-Hur, what is the, what's that? You know, we, it's about the, you know, the life of Jesus and Judah Ben-Hur and so forth. But what, I don't understand the Christmas angle. Well, because Ben-Hur begins with the nativity. It begins with the wise men coming. It's a very dramatic opening. So it tells the whole story. So Ben-Hur, it at least takes you to what the Christmas story is, that the Christ in Christmas. I mean, when we talk, you and I talk about Christmas, we're talking about the incarnation, the person and work of Jesus Christ, why he came, why he was born, his death, his resurrection and ascension. You don't find those kinds of things in a lot of these so-called Christmas movies. But what we find in them is the fruit of Christmas, the result of Christmas. People are living within the context of a Christian worldview. And even though Jesus is not mentioned, there are a lot of things around what's taking place in their lives, that Chris, you know, the elements of Christmas and what Jesus did and transformational and so forth, you know, take place. So, you know, trying to keep that in mind when you, when someone says, oh, this is a Christmas movie. And I've seen a list of 100 Christmas movies, and some of them just, I'm thinking, they don't have anything whatsoever to do with Christmas, other than the fact that the word Christmas is used or it takes place during Christmas time. And some of the movies of the ones that you sent to me, I'm going to pull up my
You are just making me think. Maybe perhaps we could talk about The Shop Around the Corner then, because Jimmy Stewart, what we're looking at in The Shop Around the Corner is a 1940 film before he goes into World War II. And Jimmy Stewart did serve, he was, he flew planes, in the war. And so 1946, this is him post-war, right? So we're seeing him before and after the war, or his time serving in the war. And The Shop Around the Corner takes place in Budapest, Hungary. I thought that was an interesting selection, but also there was a lot going on historically at that. So could we talk about that movie?
Sure, you go ahead with it, because I personally, I did not care for the film very much.
Really?
Yeah, you know, to me, it was okay. Of course, it was remade as You've Got Mail, and I thought that was a lot more fun in it, in the antagonism that took place. So that was much better. I just didn't care for it, and it may have been because of just the old world aspects to it all and so forth. And I'm not real sure how much of the Christmas element is in it. So why don't you go ahead and tell me what you think about the film?
Okay, I actually liked it. And the reason I liked it was because of the plot line itself. So I'll read the plot summary, guys. That way I don't stumble over it. So it's set in a charming Budapest gift shop called Matacek and Company. And it tells a delicate story of Alfred Kralik, who is played by James Stewart, and Clara Novak, who's played by Margaret Sullavan, and two co-workers whose relationship is defined by constant irritation and misunderstanding. Now, I've never seen You've Got Mail. Well, I know that's silly. I guess I need to go watch it because I've heard it's a great film. But that's one of the things I liked, was that there was this constant irritation, and they clash daily in the shop over almost everything, and whether it's a sales technique or their personal boundaries, and each though are secretly corresponding with an anonymous pen pal who they believe represents their ideal romantic partner, right? That's really what it's about. And they're writing to each other saying, "Dear friend." And so it sort of surrounds this, and it all takes place around this little shop. And it's getting ready for Christmas. That's what's actually going on, is they're getting ready for Christmas Eve, which is their big shopping night. And it's just a lot of back and forth. But Matacek, the man who owns the company, he's played by the same man that played the wizard in The Wizard of Oz. Yeah, and So there's problems with his marriage. His money is being spent by his wife, and then you find out there's some illicit behavior going on between his wife and somebody who works for him. And unfortunately, the owner thinks that it's Jimmy Stewart's character. And so Kralik ends up getting let go, and there's just a lot to the story. Now, as far as redemption or anything that we would find from our own, the Christian story, there's really not a whole lot in it, like you said, other than the fact that it's just around Christmas and these two people do find them, they do eventually find that they are each other's pen pal. And, I won't tell you anymore. If you guys want to go watch it, you can find out if they get together or not. I haven't seen You've Got Mail, so I don't know if they got together either.
Well, of course, the You've Got Mail, it's the same sort of correspondence. The two of them are corresponding by email.
Okay.
And
AOL, I'm sure, right? That was a
yeah,
long time ago. Yeah, okay.
right. And Meg Ryan owns a wonderful little bookstore. And Tom Hanks owns a conglomerate bookstore, and they're competing and so forth. But they're communicating by email, and it's a fun movie. And I love some of the emails that go back and forth where if you want any question answered, you go to The Godfather. You look at the phrases in The Godfather,
Okay.
and Meg Ryan doesn't have any slightest idea what he's talking about, and he's anyway it's a fun movie. And Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan had done a couple of movies, together. What's the one with Seattle?
Yeah, I've heard of it.
That was pretty good too. But anyway,
Sleepless in Seattle.
yeah. So the two of them, they shop around the corner, and You've Got Mail. You've Got Mail is based upon the shop around the corner because she has a shop, and I think it might actually be called Shop Around the Corner. So, and the You've Got Mail one. So anyway,
Oh, okay.
yeah.
Well,
And
the one thing I was just going to add about this, because I did a little bit of research just as in regard to Budapest, Hungary, it just so happens that the playwright of this film, well, he wrote a play. His name was Miklos Laszlo, and he was Hungarian. And then Ernst Lubitsch, which, if you know anything about old Hollywood, there was a thing called the Lubitsch touch. It was his style of filmmaking. Well, in 1940, Europe was on the brink of collapse because of the Nazi expansion. And so what had happened, Hungary had aligned itself with Nazi Germany. Anti-Jewish laws were increasing. The country would soon join the Axis formally in November 1940, and war tensions permeated all throughout Central Europe. So as far as history and what's going on, there was a lot going on actually at that time. And so America, they were sort of hungry for some good news. There was a lot of bad news going on in Europe, and they were just looking for it. And it would only be a year later that, Pearl Harbor would happen and start sucking America into this. So they were just looking at a warm-hearted story from Hungary, just trying to, it's almost like the days of old, but it disappears very quickly for them.
yeah, I think you find a lot of these movies from the 40s and early 50s. There was this call for let's just go to the movies and watch some good stuff now, and some of the best films, and even preceding the war. I mean, you look at 1939, the number of films that came out in 1939 were just remarkable, that
Right.
still stand up today. So, today, we're watching all this stuff at home, but back in the 40s and the 50s, it was a big deal to go to a movie theater to kind of get away from it all and sit and be with other people. And there was the community aspect of going to a feature film. And I remember the movie theaters. I was born in 1950, and one of the selling points of movie theaters was the fact that they were air conditioned. They would put a big sign up and said, air conditioned. People, in the middle of summer, and hey, you're going to go inside of this big movie, this theater, in order to watch these films. You see that they were in fact, air conditioned. And another aspect of it, a lot of these films, that they were letterbox. They weren't the squares. And when we were watching TV, our TV sets were square, and it
Right.
cut off the left side and the right side of a film that was broadcast over the air on television. And so if you watched How the West Was Won, for example, you missed almost a third of what was filmed, because when they came across on TV, they were square. So when you went to a movie theater, you saw this extravaganza of filmmaking. The colors, the widescreen, and all that. And now today, of course, our TVs have changed, and now they're rectangular, and so they take the what's called letterbox edition of films. But yeah, back then it was a community thing to go to a movie theater. The people would talk about it afterwards and so forth. And I've got fond memories of films I went to, and getting the reaction of the audience while you're there, where at home, not that you don't have some reaction, but the community reaction was really significant, and I think really helpful, especially during the war years and then after the war years.
Right. I have fond memories too. The first movie I ever saw was the Temple of Doom, which was
The
Harrison
second.
Ford. Yeah, the second film with Indiana Jones, and it gave me my fear of snakes, a very healthy fear of snakes. So these other movies that we had on the list, there was Remember the Night. Now I have not seen that film.
Let me go down my list here. Remember the Night. Oh, yeah. This is Barbara Stanwyck and Fred McMurray. And Fred McMurray is a lawyer, he's a prosecutor, and Barbara Stanwyck is a petty larcenist. And she gets caught, and it's right at Christmas time, and she is going to be basically, because it's Christmas time and the legal system kind of shuts down, she would be in end up going to jail over the Christmas holidays. And Fred McMurray, feeling for her a little bit, ends up getting her out, and she's in his custody. And so she had been, she had stolen a bracelet from a New York jewelry store. Frederick Murray's character feels, it's the holiday spirit. He decides to take her to his family. And there's a lot that's there's a there are other things that take place during all this. And they go by her family, her mother, and you begin to see why Barbara Stanwyck's character is the way she is. She's had an abusive mother. And very, very, what we would call today, low self-esteem. And it kind of ruined her life. But in the middle of all of this, Fred McMurray's character falls in love with her and actually decides, why don't the two of us just leave? Let's get out of all of this. I'll marry you. We'll just all run away. Well, she ends up going to his home and his family, and it's there that, remember, this is Christmas time, she sees what a real family is all about, and she is something that she's missed in her life, and it's transformational for her. And so she's the one who says, "No, we're going to go back, and I'm going to face the consequences of my action." And so she's the one, over against what Fred McMurray's character did, who was the prosecutor, she's the one who ends up, deciding, look, if I'm going to change my life, this is the way it's going to have to be done. I'm going to have to be, and if we're going to have this relationship, this has to be taken care of. So it is this Christmas spirit of a family and of a community that transforms her entire worldview, and puts her on the wrath of righteousness at the end of the movie.
Yeah, so that it's a great like redemption type story, but it gives you a back history of her character to sort of show like sometimes we're a product of how we've been raised, and we get into that. So that makes good sense. Now, Fred McMurray, of course, My Three Sons, he was the father in My Three Sons, right? Fred McMurray.
Yes.
Yes. And then Barbara Stanwyck, that's Big Valley, right? Wasn't she
Oh
in Big?
yeah. I mean, Barbara
Yeah.
Stanwyck, she was probably one of the most popular and highest paid actresses in Hollywood at the time. Fred McMurray, he played a lot of wholesome films, and then he played with Barbara Stanwyck again in a film noir, which I'm trying to come to mind, Double Indemnity,
Right.
where
Yes.
they both play despicable characters. Edward G. Robinson, if you haven't seen Double Indemnity, I think one of the best aspects of it isn't so much the two of them, McMurray and Stanwyck, but it's Edward G. Robinson's character, who is just a dogged investigator, and he just keeps turning over this case, and he's an insurance, adjuster, and Frederick Murray is, of course, is an insurance salesman. And it's like a father-son relationship between the two of them. And so if you haven't seen Double Indemnity, it doesn't have anything to do with Christmas.
Not at
And
all. And it kind of
just
takes a dark turn. There's some, yeah, it's kind of got a darker chemistry to it, doesn't it?
yes, yeah. And it just shows, I think, the range that both Stanwyck had and Fred McMurray. And then of course he goes on TV and he's, my three sons, he's this great father and all that. But I think Fred McMurray is one of the most underrated actors in Hollywood, and but anyway, this is a pretty good movie. All these movies are kind of contrived and all that, but I just think the redemptive aspect of this at Christmas time, where she decides, I'm going to change my life. I have to take responsibility, and that was, I think that's one of the best parts of the whole movie.
Now he, from what I was reading, it seems like his character, he was willing to like step down, I think, even out of his
Oh yeah.
firm to prevent her from having to go through this. And then her care for him or love for him was like, no, I'm going to face this. And that, so it's both characters on either side, just really wrestling with what, not only the morality of it, but just how to operate within the world that they're in and find a way to get together. That's,
Yeah.
I'm going to
Yeah.
watch it. I'll watch that
Yeah.
movie for
It's
sure.
yeah, she, he loves her and he tries to persuade her to jump bail, but she refuses. Let's go back. Let's go back. At
Wow.
this point, nothing bad had happened, although he really shouldn't have taken her on this trip. But
Right.
she goes back to face the music.
Well, so that's going to bring us to the next one, which is one that I watched and really liked, which was The Holiday Affair.
Yeah.
That is a strange movie. It really is a strange film. When I watched it, I kept saying, as I was watching it, I was like, well, first of all, it's got Janet Leigh in it. And I'm a Hitchcock fan. So Janet Leigh from Psycho, right?
Right.
Who played Marion Crane in that iconic movie, that iconic character. But with
Yeah,
Robert.
she never took a shower after Psycho.
Yeah. I can't blame her. And also, Robert Mitchum. Robert Mitchum is in this. And
You know why Robert Mitchum was in this film? 10 years older than Janet Leigh.
it had something to do with the studio and something that he had done, I think, right?
He got arrested for possession of marijuana.
Oh, yeah. So that, I mean, obviously back then,
Yes.
that was a really big deal back then.
Right. And so, he played tough guy characters. One of the best films, if you've never seen it, it's called Out of the Past with Kirk Douglas. It's a terrific movie, because I've watched it several times. It's just everything about it is great. But he was this tough guy sort of thing, westerns and war pictures. And this was a way to kind of rebuild his reputation, and so this particular film takes place. And Janet Leigh is a her husband had died in the wars, and she's left with a child. And there's a Wendell Corey is going after he wants to marry her, and she's reluctant to do it and all that. And th this the story really is. contrived. Robert Mitchum's working at a department store, and Janet Leigh, she's one of the you go into these competing stores and you buy products and you see what their products are like, and you take them back to the store that sent you there, and it has to do with a train. Robert Mitchum finds out about what the situation is. Janet Leigh got fired, and Robert Mitchum, got fired. He ends up buying the train, goes back with the, and he ends up being part of this triangle with Wendell Corey, Janet Leigh, and then of course Robert Mitchum. And Wendell Corey's character, the young boy, just does not like him, and he takes a liking to Robert Mitchum. And in the end, they Janet Leigh, Robert Mitchum, get together, which is kind of odd because Janet Leigh is now is unemployed. Robert Mitchum is unemployed. In fact, he was accused of a crime that Janet Leigh and the son come to rescue him from. But it's a clever film. I liked it again. One of the reasons is because it has trains in it, and I'm a big train fan. And I and Janet Leigh and Robert Mitchum, I you know they're great actors. But it's again the reason it's considered a Christmas movie is because it takes place around Christmas, and there is—I don't want to say there's a redemptive element to it—but Janet Leigh's character kind of wakes up to the fact that her husband is gone. She can't shape her own child in the image of her husband, and it's time to move on, quit being trying to be stuck in the past, and move on. So it's, but it's a fun movie to watch.
It is fun. And first of all, I didn't know that there was a job, and forgive me, I probably should have known this, but these shoppers that actually went around and they shopped, they would buy things, bring it back, they would investigate it, get all the information to the company they bought, and then they would take it and return it. And so that's what Janet Leigh's character did for a job, and Robert Mitchum he figures it out right away. And so, like you said, they both got fired. One of my favorite parts of the movie, though, was first of all, they go to Central Park and there's some penguins, which I thought that was kind of interesting. There were penguins swimming in Central Park. But when he goes back to her apartment for this Christmas dinner, and it's Robert Mitchum, Wendell Corey, Janet Leigh, and her parents, and then her little boy. And Robert Mitchum stands up and basically says, "I love you and I want to marry you." Like he says it right in front of Wendell Corey. And he was like, "Sorry to be so brash, but that's what I want." And she just said, "Well, you need to get your coat and go." And so you think, how's this going to play out? But it really is kind of, it's got a weird feeling to it. I don't know what it is about it, but I really liked the film. I just thought it was kind of odd. It may be contrived, but how they get to the end, very bizarre. That was a really interesting film.
And again, it's, you just lay aside your thinking cap and just sit back and kind of watch the characters work, and they do in this case. But you're right. I mean, it's, I'm thinking this could never happen,
Yes, yeah,
but
especially the little
it is
boy.
Hollywood. So we, here we are with it
Right. But
anyway.
that little boy carrying the train, he wants to return that train, so he's carrying it through New York, by the way, and he's going up into these big buildings by himself, and he goes to the owner of the department store to give this train back and get money back so he can give it to Robert Mitchum's character. That's what he wants to do, this little boy does. And so, it's kind of sweet. And also, Janet Leigh was married, I think, had just married Tony Curtis, those are the parents of actress Jamie Lee Curtis. That really shocked me when I found out that Janet Leigh, Marion Crane from Psycho, was Jamie Lee's mother, and then she would later go on and play in Halloween films.
Oh, I know. Yeah, the Scream Queen,
Yes.
be. And then of course she was in Janet Leigh with what's her name again?
Jamie Lee
Jamie
Curtis.
Lee Curtis was in the Christmas in the you want to call it a Christmas movie. That was Trading Places.
Oh, yes.
She was,
Boy, was she in that
she was, yeah, she was in that movie. She's played all different kinds of things. And
She was also in Christmas with the Cranks.
Yeah, there again, when you start talking about Christmas movies, the category is extremely wide as what constitutes a Christmas movie.
Yes,
Anyway.
absolutely. So here's a movie that I haven't seen, and I was trying to watch it, and I could only find one way to watch it, and it was on I think it was on MGM Plus or something, but it was called The Holly and the Ivy, and that one seemed to be like the most Christian of all the films that I had selected from. Have you seen that
No,
film?
no, I haven't. No.
So here's what I'll do. I'll just let me just read it since neither one of us have seen it. I'll just read the plot summary and then maybe if we can find a way to watch it, we could. So, Holly and the Ivy is a quiet, emotionally layered British drama set during Christmas in a small Norfolk village. The story follows Jenny Gregory, played by Celia Johnson, the devoted daughter of Reverend Martin Gregory. So, here we are with the Reverend, played by Ralph Richardson. She has spent her adult life caring for her aging father, sacrificing personal happiness to maintain the vicarage and support his ministry. This was filmed in 1952, directed by George Moore O'Farrell. It's based on the play by Winard Brown. So that's what I've got. Evidently, it's when I was reading about Christmas movies, this was high on the list that it should be watched, but it's hard to find. Maybe MGM Plus, guys, if you go want to go watch it. But it's an old black and white film about a vicar.
Yeah, some of these are difficult to find,
They
and
are.
some of them are, are more what I would call religious, and we mentioned some of them in the previous years with the bishop's wife, and then it was later Denzel Washington redid it as the preacher's wife,
Right.
so you'll find things like that. But I'm going to tell you about some Christmas films that you've probably never heard of,
Okay.
and one of them, let's see if I can get you this. This one is, it's called Mr. Soft Touch,
Never heard of it.
and most people haven't, and it stars Glenn Ford,
Okay.
and he comes back from World War II, and I guess he had a nightclub, and it had been taken over by some of his underlings, and then they had killed his business partner. And he wants his money, so he actually ends up robbing his own nightclub of $100,000. Remember, $100,000,
That's a
back
lot.
then is a lot. You're talking about like $1 million today.
Right.
And he's trying to escape. He's got to get out of town because the mob, the people who took over his nightclub, are after him. They're going to kill him, take the money, and I won't go through the whole scene. But he finds a way to get arrested, so he could spend 3 nights in jail, because the family that he knows got him a ticket on a ship to get out of the country. But it doesn't sail until after Christmas. So he decides he's going to try to get arrested. And he fakes being someone else who was causing disturbance and also abusing his wife. Anyway, well, they decide to let him go. And he's panicking. And he comes across this social worker who owns a place to help the homeless and to help youth and so forth. And so she says she takes him in. And there's a lot of stuff that goes on in all of this. She still thinks he's a man who abuses his wife, and so forth. Then she finds out that he actually has a gun. And during this process, the two of them fall in love. And then she finally finds out the real story behind all this. And the this the, the these the mob comes looking for him, and ends up burning down the place where she's taking care of the homeless and these young boys. They want that $100,000. They finally get it. He ends up escaping. The way they get it is they actually burn the place down,
Okay.
and he goes back to the nightclub and goes in and gets the money back. In the process of all of this, what I've just told you, there's a lot more that goes on in all of this sort of thing. His nickname is Joe Miracle, He has a Polish name. I think it's called Mirowski or something of that for that kind of name. Goes by Joe Miracle, and he's doing all of these benevolent things for this this house that this woman has, and ends up getting a piano, but with all of his streetwise contacts, he ends up getting brand new blankets for the beds. She ends up getting a Christmas tree that helps the young kids, ends up getting a Christmas tree, very, very, very large Christmas tree. He ends up actually helping these young kids because they thought they were going to take him gambling. And this is a guy who owns a nightclub and knows all the tricks and so forth. And he just takes all their money to teach them a lesson. So here's a guy who has his heart changed as meeting this woman, whose name was Jenny Jones, meets this woman, and the two of them bond. And he talks about how he does not want to end up in the gutter, and family. There's family aspects of all this, the way he was raised and all that. And he or more or less kind of berates her. You've had this soft life and so forth. And then she pulls back the hair on one of her ears, and he says, "See, this hearing aid I have. This is the reason I can't hear out of this ear is because of the abuse that my father planted on me." And so Joe Miracle transforms himself, and transforms the home where all these people are through his little miracles throughout his time there over those 3 days. I won't tell you the ending of it because the ending, you're not really sure just exactly how it ends. But I love Glenn Ford. I just think he was one of the best actors. In fact, my wife will tell you she actually met him many, many years ago. It's very, very, very good film called Soft Touch.
Mr. Soft Touch or
Mr.
just
Soft
Soft?
Touch. Yeah,
Mr.
Mr. Soft
Soft
Touch.
Touch. I will look that up and watch that for sure. I might watch that tonight, actually.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to tell you, we got a couple more minutes here.
Yeah, we
Okay.
sure do.
These are animated features. And the first one was done in 1939, and the other one was done in 1955. And it's simply called Goodwill to Men.
Okay.
Based on the Hark the Herald Angels sing a hymn. So the first one is in 1939, and it's two that you're going to think, really, this is a Christmas film? I'm going to tell you, one of the reasons this is more of a Christmas film than all these other ones is because of the centerpiece of all of these two animated features from 39 and what did I say, 60,
55, I think,
50,
right?
55, is the Bible takes center stage in this. And it's so it starts off with these two young squirrels ask their grandfather on Christmas Eve, as he comes through the neighborhood, and he's singing Hark the Herald Angels Sing, and it says peace on earth, goodwill to men. And so the children are asked, these squirrels are asking, who are these men? Who are men? Well, then he starts telling the story about how th this would have been, and see, you're looking at 1939, so you're looking at the First World War, and he tells the story of the First World War like situation here, and about how these men war against one another and kill one another until there are only two men left.
Wow,
And they're
okay.
both in foxholes. One is just filled with water. And here you go. You got everyone else in the whole world is dead. And these two guys are still going at it. And they end up killing killing one another.
Wow.
Oh
Okay.
yeah. And let me just tell you, the artwork in this is really amazing. It's called, let's see if I can find this thing. The grandfather squirrel tells them in a what's called a radioscope, ROTO, rotoscope history. And what they did is they took original film and they it'd be like AI today, like take this original film and turn it into so it looks like it's animated, but realistically animated. So the animation is in this thing is terrific. And so he's telling this story. Then he goes on to say that after all this happens, all the men are dead. The squirrels go to a bombed out church, and they come across this owl who's up on the pulpit, and he's reading a book, and the book is the Bible. And in fact, I'll send you these clips. I'll send you the link to it. Plus, I'll send you the clips from the Bible. So here's an owl. There's a pulpit, and he's reading from the Bible, "Thou shalt not kill." Right there, you got the sixth commandment. Then it's "Love thy neighbor as thyself." And then in the 1939 version of this, and what you find in the 1939 version of this is they take all the implements of war and they turn them into home, little houses for themselves and so forth. In the 1939 version, there's a quotation here from, I think it's from Isaiah, if I can find the actual verse here. Oh, Isaiah 61:4, "Ye shall rebuild the old wastes." And this verse is in this thought, this next verse is implied. "He will judge between the nations and will settle disputes for many peoples. They will beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation will not take sword up against nation, nor will they train for war anymore." Isaiah 2:4. Now that verse isn't in there, but it's implied in what takes place after all the men are killed and the squirrels go and they, this owl is reading from the book, from the Bible. And you're thinking, man, this, how come I've never seen this before? And then in the 1955 version, it's the same kind of thing. And it is, at this time it's with mice. And the kids ask again, the little mice ask again, what are men? And it's the same story. And if I can find the phraseology here, they actually change some of the lyrics of "Hark the Herald Angels Sing." And it's "Hark the Herald Angels Sing, glory to the Lord our King, peace on earth, goodwill to men." Think of that. 1939, glory to the Lord our King. And then you get to the 1955 version of this. And this is just some of the dialogue. The owl says it looks like a book of when he gets when the owl comes up and he sees this book, which is the Bible. It's open up on this pulpit, big pulpit Bible. It looks like a book of rules that belong to them men. Then he reads the sixth commandment, "Thou shalt not kill," and then turns the pages until he comes to "Love thy neighbor as yourself." Now listen to this dialogue. "Looks like some pretty good rules, but I guess them men didn't pay much attention to them. Yes, it was a good book of rules and still is a good book of rules.
Oh,
Love
wow.
thy neighbor as thyself. On these words depend." Listen. "On these words depend the future of us all."
Yes.
Now
Wow.
that's not me interpreting what this is, what is actually in the that was in that's in the 1955 version of it. Yeah, but I'll send you all this. I got all these little these all these stills from this if you want to be able to put them in somewhere.
Yeah, I'll put them in the show notes if you share them with me. That'd be
Yeah.
good.
So you got the 1939 version and the 1955, and the artwork is very, very good on all this. And I think Hanna-Barbera did the 1955 version, and it's simply called Goodwill to Men. The 1955 version is easy to find. The 1939 version is difficult to find, but I did find one, and I'll send that to you. Now, here's the another one. It's
Okay.
called The Song of Christmas 1957. And it there's nativity songs in it and carols and passages from the Bible. And it's in two parts. I think this is the one. Song of Christmas, it's a nativity.
Would you say that title one more time? What did you call it?
Hold on, let's see. It's called This one is called The Song of
The
Christmas.
Song of Christmas, okay.
Yeah. And it's in two parts. The first part is the traditional Santa Claus Christmas story. This is all marionettes. They're not, don't get marionettes and puppets mixed up. Marionettes are, they're articulated, wooden
Right.
persons and animals and so forth. Very, 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 very difficult, to
Like what you
do.
would see in The Sound of Music, right? That would be the marionettes, correct? Where they're hanging from strings and they can walk and
Yes,
move. Yes.
exactly. And the first part of this is, if I can remember this, if I got this down here, is Gene Shepherd, who did
A Christmas
A Christmas
Story?
Story.
Wow.
He's the first part of it, and it just tells the basic Christmas story of Santa Claus and so forth. But then the one that follows this is the Nativity, and it is narrated by Alexander Scourby.
Yeah, who did the Bible, right?
Exactly, and now
Yes.
you get the real kind of like the Ben-Hur story. You get the real Christmas story by these marionettes, and with Alexander Scourby, who's narrating this.
He
And
has
it
a
came out in
tremendous
19.
voice. A tremendous voice.
Yes.
Wow.
Oh yeah. If you love the King James, which a lot of people do, and you want someone to narrate it, it's Alexander Scourby.
Yes, it's
I mean,
phenomenal.
yes.
Yes.
And this was produced by the Bell Telephone Company. And
Really?
I remember this growing up. This was in the early 1950s. There are two dates for this, 1951 or 1953. And it's and anyway, it's the Song of Christmas. I think another one is called, it may be under the title The Spirit of Christmas, but I'll send you all the links to this as well.
Wow.
And let me see if there's one more here. Can't think of the I can't find it. Oh yeah, so you got the marionette one, and then the one with Alexander Scourby. Let me redo this. There's one that Alexander Scourby does that's animated. I'm sorry, the one that's
Okay.
there's one that's animated. And it is called The Song of Christmas.
Okay.
But Alexander Scourby reads it. And then there is the one I mentioned, which is done by Bell Telephone Company, and it's The Spirit of Christmas by Mabel Beaton Marionettes that was put out by Bell Telephone, and which is now AT&T, back in the 1951 or 1953. But
Now,
I'll
is that the
send you
one
these.
that's narrated by Gene Shepherd?
The one that's there marinated is narrated by Gene Shepherd. I think it's also that one is also narrated. The actual Christmas story is as narrated by Alexander Scourby, and both of them are done with marionettes. And
Okay.
then there's the one story that is animated, and I think Scourby may do that one as well. But it's the true Christmas story. I think it's called The
Wow.
Song of Christmas, which was
Well, I'm definitely
1950.
going to watch that one if I can. I love Alexander Scourby. I
Yeah.
remember, in the 90s, I had the CDs with the KJV, and that's how I would listen to it. And now, I mean, you can actually go and listen to them online absolutely free if you want to hear Scurvy.
I can still hear his voice
Me too.
from the 1950s when this played, especially the Luke 2:1 passage where a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that the whole world be taxed.
Or the one where now the birth of Jesus Christ was on this wise.
Yes. Oh, it's yeah. I mean, it's tremendous. So anyway, that's. I mean, those are kind of my picks over the years of Christmas films. You can. I guess people can go back. I guess you can link them back to the one we did last year.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll just say this as we close out this episode. Have you seen the new updated Best Christmas Pageant Ever?
No, I have not.
Did you ever see the original with Loretta Swit as the main character? Yeah, so that was from the 80s. So, guys, Dallas Jenkins, he is the director and producer of The Chosen, which is very popular today. Last year, he put out The Best Christmas Pageant Ever, which was an update. One of my guests, Kirk B.R. Waller, plays the pastor in that. And it is a tremendous, tremendous film. It's actually really good. And it's surrounded by a woman who's putting on the best Christmas pageant. And there are some local kids that are pretty much vagrants, but their parents aren't around. And so these kids are just living on their own, trying to do the best they can. And they come to the church and they find out that they can get free food and free candy and things. And so they're there. And this mother decides to really take these kids under her wing and help them do this Christmas play, which tells the story of Mary and the birth of Jesus. And it is tremendous. So if you get a chance to watch it, The Best Christmas Pageant Ever. The original one was one of my favorites. It came on television every year. You don't see it anymore, but Loretta Swit played that character. But then the new one, I can't even remember the name of all the actors, but there's several very good actors in it. And several that you'll see from The Chosen are actually in it.
Now, Loretta Swit, she's probably most famous for MASH,
Hot Lips
playing Margaret
Houlihan.
Houlihan.
Yep. Hot Lips, of course. Yeah. Well, Mr.
So.
Amar, thank you for taking your time out. I'm going to go check out those films that I have not seen. Guys, any of the links that he mentioned, I'll have them in the show notes. You can get them. Remember to go over to AmericanVision.org and pick up these books that are coming out. Look for the ones that are coming out next year. And be sure, and there's also ways that you can donate to American Vision and assist Mr. Damar. He is a one-man show working very hard, so let's support him.
Well, Rick, I appreciate it. Thanks. This is always a good break from some of the crazy stuff I have to deal with on a daily
Yeah,
basis.
I guarantee it. Same here. Same here. It was nice to not talk about hell for a minute. All right, well,
Little bit
Mr. Damar.
more about heaven than hell.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks so much. I really
All
appreciate
right.
it.
Thanks. See ya. Bye-bye.